Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Look what they've done to my song, Ma.
Nick, it's a pleasure to have you. I don't believe we've ever spoken before. You're a recent graduate of Slippery Rock. Am I right about that?
No.
Paul, that introduction was one of the worst in fan history.
Yes, well, that was funny, though.
It was.
The best part about it, again, is we were able to blame City Limits.
I still think he is to blame.
He probably is, because he screwed it up.
Right. I told him this morning, if you can get a draft guy, that would be great. He said, my buddy Nick, and I thought that City Limits sent me a bio. Can we hear that one more time? Because the way that he said no, Limits, really, really made it. It wasn't like, no, I don't know where you might have got that from. It was just, no, you idiot. Let's
Nick,
hear it again.
It's a pleasure to have you. I don't believe we've ever spoken before. You're a recent graduate of Slippery Rock. Am I right about that?
No.
Where did I get it? That's the thing. Other than it was the bio that Limits sent me.
Again, I didn't send you a bio.
Yes, you did.
You sent him the bio, and you said he was a guy that was from Slippery Rock, and as a result, he made that mistake.
Where did Flying Myron Brown play?
Slippery Rock.
And that's what the bio said. It said that
when he graduated, he was the all-time leading scorer of any player that played college basketball in Pennsylvania.
Nick Faribault?
Yeah, Nick. Yeah, that's who we're talking about now. Nick. Yes, that's who.
It said on the City Limit, on the bio City Limit sent me, that other than Myron Brown, Nick Faribault is one of the most famous graduates in Slippery Rock history. Yes. I saw it.
Myron, like I said, so Division I, Division II, Division III, NAI, whatever. Every person that has played, every male, I'm sorry, that has played college basketball in Pennsylvania, Myron Brown scored more points than all of them.
Wow. He was telling me about some of their wins when we were playing the other day, about how he took great pleasure when they would beat, like, guys who were Division I types.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, and he dunked on you, huh?
Very much, yes.
Rebound dunk?
No, it was a alley-oop, actually, he caught it and reversed it on me. He caught it and, like, was reversing in midair. He caught it backwards. I'll tell you the story. It was a fast break. Guys coming towards me. I'm backing up, and the guy kind of just throws the ball up, and I'm thinking he's shooting it.
Yeah.
So I kind of turn around like I'm going to get in position to rebound, and as I get kind of down toward the block, I feel this ass hit me right in the face, right in the head, like snaps my head back. He caught the ball, dunked it through the hoop, and the momentum of his body and everything else hitting me kind of bent me down this way, and the ball came through the hoop and hit me in the side of the head.
Injury to insult. Oh, insult it was to injury. Just,
and then the worst part was the walk of shame. Because it was at the Connie Hawkins leg, which was down in the old Penley Apartments. That complex there, where everybody that was in that lived in that area was out to watch those games every night. The Connie Hawkins was the league. And, of course, they got this early on when I was playing, they started, my nickname was Petrovic. You know, remember Drazen Petrovic,
yeah,
the guy?
You must have been a shooter.
But it was more about they were basically, and so as I'm, like, running down the court, there's dudes out like halfway onto the court screaming, yeah, white boy, what you think about that? What you think about that, Petrovic? I'm running the whole way down the court going, why is this happening to me right now? Yes.
Petrovic.
Yeah, Petrovic is what they were calling me. They were yelling at me. There were women yelling at me. Why you think about that, white boy? I'm like, how did I get here?
Did Myron say anything?
Myron was a I would call a Hall of Fame trash talker.
Mm.
He was talking the entire game. Didn't matter what he was doing. So, you know, for the next 5 minutes of that game, didn't matter what was going on in the game, I was hearing from him every possession, one side and the other. Even when I was out of the game, I was hearing from him still. You know, what'd you think about that? You know? Yes. That was a long, that was the longest game of my entire career. Although, I tell you, maybe the next year, and actually it might have been the same season, Will Herndon, who played at UMass.
From Perry?
From
where did he
Alderdice.
Go? Alderdice.
So he was really good getting off the deck, straight off the deck. He caught a tip dunk off a rebound. Like, I could feel him crawling up my back. I'm like, this is not going to end well. Got up way high because, you know, if you get a tip dunk like that off the deck, you have to be the first to jump. You know, and he, like, so even if I was going to jump, he had already gotten off. So I basically just had to brace myself for the, you know, the ball coming through the hoop 100 miles an hour and hitting me in the back of the head. So I caught two. And, of course, that was the same walk of shame where, you know, the whole place was screaming at me. You know what I'm saying?
Man, I caught one of those, too. And I was telling Myron about it the other day, a kid named Gary Wheelbon from South Park High School in Buffalo, South Park. It was a game at Memorial Odd where the Buffalo Braves used to play. It was like the local semis. And I was looking up at a rebound. And it was the only time in a basketball game that I saw the bottom of somebody's sneaker. I saw the bottom of his sneaker. He jumped up over me. And I didn't know what to do. I was just, for a minute, just like made of stone. I just stood there like, what just happened? This dude jumped over me for a rebound dunk. And not just me, like four people he jumped over. Anyway, let's get to Sully. And the Penguins, I don't know, do we call it their obituary today? It was just, I feel like people, you wrote about this today. I feel like people in general, Sully in particular, want to put this nice bow on a miserably failed season.
Yes.
And this was a miserable failure. And it was cool when the Islanders shook Jeff Carter's hand, and I wish him the best. And when he first got here, it was great. And they signed him to a bad deal. And like Josh Yowie wrote today, it's not his fault they signed him to a bad deal. I get it all. And that was cool last night, especially when Sid set him up for a goal and they all went crazy. Great. That is a nice little thing that happened. And so was their little streak at the end. But let's not delude ourselves here. And I give Erik Karlsson credit. In a Yowie story today, he said what the coach would not. People want to hear a little bit of outrage. The only thing I wanted to hear from Mike Sullivan today or yesterday was this was unacceptable.
Right.
We have the highest of standards here. We have high-end talent here. We brought in Erik Karlsson to push us over the top, the Norris Trophy winner, 100-point defenseman, and we got worse in some very key areas. I'm not going to accept this. And we're going to search long and hard this offseason to try to fix our problems. This was absolutely unacceptable. It took Karlsson.
Right. Who's only been here for 1 year.
To actually say that to Yowie today, where he was saying things just along those lines, like that we were a huge disappointment, Karlsson said. A huge disappointment. And that's right. That's accurate. And I credit him for saying that we didn't live up to expectations, underachieved. There's no other way to say it, Erik Karlsson said. Good for him. What about the coach?
Well, again, but the coach is part of the problem. I'm convinced of that. The coach is actually a part of the problem. Because at the end of the day, when you see a team that seemingly over the last few years, right, our play is never what it should be. They're never really good in overtime. They give up. They lose leads in the third period regularly. I mean, at some point you have to say, whatever they're doing is not working. And the fact that there is, Joe, and this is what the whole point of my column was. The whole point of my column was basically they keep trying to put this like bow and this happy face on, well, you know, we're really close. We proved it down the stretch. We really proved the way we did. And the reality is, if the teams that they were chasing hadn't all fallen apart, they would have been nowhere close to a playoff spot. But they won, and they got some points and all that, and that's great. But they also had the Flyers completely collapse, right? Detroit had a little stretch there where they couldn't win a game. Washington lost like four or five in a row before they figured it out. If all those things don't happen, they're not even in it still on Monday.
Right. That's the other galling thing, is that a really bad hockey team got into the playoffs instead of
right.
them. And that's the Capitals.
And that's exactly right. And so there's no way to put a happy face on what happened this year. Because ultimately, Joe, if they had that spurt of what was it? What was it 10 games in a row or something where they got at least a point?
Something like that,
right?
Yeah.
In that last 2 weeks or 3 weeks or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, it was interrupted by the Boston game, but something like that.
Let's say if you flip that, put that in November, whatever stretch in November, bring it here, nobody would be talking about how this was a great season or this was even a good season or this was even a successful season. And as I said yesterday, last year they got 80, I think they got 82 games from Crosby. They got 82 or 81 games from Malkin. I think they got 59 or 60 games from Letang, right? So he missed a little bit, but he really didn't miss that much. And this year they got 82 games, I think, from Carlson, Malkin, Letang, and Crosby, all four of them. And guess what? They missed the playoffs both years. So please stop trying to tell me that this is the core that we're going to build a winner around, because it's very clear this core is no longer capable of carrying this team to the finish line to get them into the playoffs and get them to be contenders. And then we don't even have to. One other thing. You have your $6 million or $5.5 million or whatever he is goalie who was healthy all year. And that's been a problem for him. But he was actually healthy all year. So did you completely miscalculate on your goalie? Did you mishandle your goalie? Or did he just kind of show you who he is? Either way, you made the and I'm fully convinced that Mike Sullivan was the loudest voice in the room saying, let's keep Tristan Jarry around, which means it's on you that your goalie, who played the whole season, but you had to bench him at the end of the most critical games, he didn't get it done either.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices, anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode, and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Stop lying to yourself is all I want. You know, just stop lying to yourself about where you're at as a franchise and as a team.
Let's hear from Sully.
With regards to Jeff, and just what was the mood after the game? Just trying to celebrate him and everything like that.
Well, it was. It's pretty cool to be part of that experience when you're around a guy that's just a terrific person and a great teammate. He's been through a lot with these guys, and they mean the world to him. And so, when you have an opportunity to be a small part of that, it's a pretty cool experience. You know, I was happy for Karts. He scored, obviously, which was great. His family had an opportunity to come and watch him play. So I was really happy for him and his family. It's a pretty cool moment.
This feeling, best record in the NHL since March 24th, how much would you relish the opportunity to keep this going? And I could even extrapolate that to next season.
Yeah, we were really proud of the group. You know, as I said to you guys this morning, you know, a month ago, we weren't in the greatest situation, and you know, there was a lot of drama around the team, and you know, our guys, they had a choice which direction they wanted to go, and it could have went the wrong way really easily, and I just think it speaks volumes for the character of the people in the dressing room, and they never looked for excuses. They were determined to drag themselves back into the fight and give ourselves a chance, and that's
what we did.
And so,
come on.
Unfortunately, we, you know, we didn't get to ultimately where we wanted to go, but I couldn't have been more proud of the group for the effort and the investment that they all had and down the stretch here in the last month or so of the season.
All right, Limits, please, on this. We're praising their character. They're making millions and millions of dollars. They're professional hockey players. They better show up. And I'll tell you this much. They quit in a game against the Capitals and used the Guentzel thing as an excuse. Oh, we're all bummed out. Again, it's pro sports. They quit and lost 6-0 that night. But set that aside for a moment. Back to the question of Sully there. Can you extrapolate this to next season? Hell no. This is silly season. This is September for the Pirates. This next season, you're going to have a different team. You're not going to have the Carolina Hurricanes and the Bruins with everything clinched, not really showing up with full intensity for you. Whatever happened in this last month was fun, and it was nice little ride and cute and all that. You know what? The games in October and November mattered. Where was the character then? Where? What about the games like the one where you had a two-man advantage with 2 minutes left and somehow lost the game in regulation? I don't want to hear this. I want to hear the coach stand up there and say, this was absolutely unacceptable. I'm as angry as the fan base. We need some answers here. The Penguins won more games last year than this year. They won 40 last year. They won 38 this year. Everything else was the same. They had fewer points. Last year, they won 3 of 4 games down the stretch before they lost to the Blackhawks and got eliminated.
In Columbus.
What are we doing here?
Well, and
what are we doing?
To your point about all that stuff, if you look at the 10 games, starting with that Capitals game, the next 10 games after the Jake Guentzel trade, they were 2-8.
Right.
2-8. And if I look at it, out of those 8 games, let me make sure I got it right here. Yes, they got 1 point out of these 8 losses. So I'm sorry. So they were 2-7-1. But at the end of the day, you want to talk about a stretch? Like, again, if you take that stretch of 10 games and put it at the end of the season in this little happy little stretch of 10 and move it into the middle of February,
yeah,
all of a sudden, guess what? They would have went into the final 10 games well in playoff position and fell out of it, and we would be talking completely different about this team. There is no, momentum, and there is no, what's the question? Did someone actually ask, well, you had the best record in hockey since April 1st or April 15th or whatever it was? That was the question.
Something along those lines, and can it be extrapolated to next season?
It won't, and it can't. You said it the best. This is the Pirates in September.
Right.
Every single year when they do well in September, it's, well, we're going to build on it for next year. It doesn't matter what happens at the end of the season from the standpoint of unless you make the playoffs. Now, if you get to the playoffs and you win a couple series, you want to tell me that, oh, well, we can build on that. We can learn from that. Our younger guys got a great experience. Maybe I'll listen to that.
Yeah, the only exception I would say is if you had a team like the 08-09 Penguins, or 7-8 is a better one, where you had a bunch of young guys really seem to come together at the end of the year. That's not what's happening here. It's a bunch of old guys. It's the oldest team in the league. Who cares what happened in these last few weeks to next season? Now, are there a couple of nice developments that could help you next year? Yes. Drew O'Connor is going to be a good player. But doesn't every team in the league have a young guy who came along this year and give the promise? For, I mean, we act like this is some, gigantic development that the Penguins, maybe it is, actually have a young player who's going to maybe be good next year. Great. Shea and St. Ivany, could they be a defense pair? They could. Sort of a mercurial position. It's kind of like relievers in baseball when you're talking bottom pair defensemen. Maybe they'll be good. Kind of encouraging. I'll buy that. Michael Bunning. Now, he's a good player. I think he's going to help the team next year. But those are all kind of run-of-the-mill developments that a lot of teams have.
Those are exactly... Those are really just sort of what I call window dressing.
Yeah.
The elephant in the room that everyone should be staring at is the 4 stars, the goalie, and Mike Sullivan.
And Sidney Crosby was unbelievable.
He was great. You should not even, I'm not sitting here saying they need to move on from him.
Right.
That's not at all what I'm saying. He was great. I just think the other three stars are holding back the progress of rebuilding, the process of rebuilding, and you know what? The process of sort of rebranding who you are as a team, which is what you have to do, because the model you have now, right? It's proven. Their last playoff series win was the Capitals in 2018. We have a large volume of work that suggests that the model that they're using is no longer going to work. It's broken. You cannot build a Stanley Cup team around those four. And some of it's because those three, at least three of those, actually all four of them at times, can be hard to coach because they want to do things their own way. So to me, if we're going to sit here and have a postmortem on the Penguins, I don't want to hear that they had the best record since the last, you know, for the last 20 games or whatever the hell that question was about, because that doesn't matter. It's an 82-game season. More importantly, the body of work we're talking about now, Joe, for the most part, is 6 years. Am I wrong about that?
No, but it's certainly two, you know?
Right.
It's six, but it's the last two, they haven't even made the playoffs. And that's what they're built to make play. That's the philosophy here, is I'm building a team, Kyle Dubas, to make a long plan. We're bringing in Erik Karlsson, the biggest move of the offseason. What happened to the Sully who arrived here? Spitting fire. Telling his stars on the bench to shut the blank up when he got here. Quit whining to officials. That was the Penguins' MO back then. He got his stars in place. He got his team whipped into shape. And he didn't smile for about 3 months. I remember writing that when he came here. Now, all these years later, he's like Mellow Mike.
Yes.
Like, yeah, oh my gosh, our team's character. I just love these guys. We played our best game of the season against Nashville. Who cares? Honestly, this season was a miserable failure. And I don't think I'm being, quote, negative by saying that. It's just what happened. They brought in Erik Karlsson. We're supposed to make some sort of lengthy run. That's what we were all waiting for. That's what they're doing here. And they didn't even make the playoffs. And someone needs to tell Sully that you show your character as much in November and December and January as you do when you're absolutely desperately trying to salvage the final playoff spot.
Right.
It was just, if I were a fan, I would have been so disappointed to hear that. And sometimes you just got to give people what they want to hear too, by the way. You got to fake it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would be faking it. I think underneath what Sully says is he's probably ticked off beyond belief that this team underachieved so badly that his coaching staff is likely going to get broken up whether he wants it or not. Todd Reirden is going to have to go. That he's going to be, if he doesn't do it on his own, he has to be ordered to do that. The power play is a historical disaster, one of the biggest embarrassments in franchise history.
Right. No question about it, and there's no reason for it. That's the worst part about it. There's no reason for it. My thing was, I was looking back. So you're telling me that the Nashville win was a better game and bigger game than when they beat the Rangers 5-2 in New York? Or the Carolina win? Do you remember the Carolina win 4-1? Pretty much dominated Carolina the entire game?
Yeah.
4-1?
He thought they played their best game of the season against Nashville.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
They played better in that game than they played against Carolina?
And here's the other part of that just can't be denied. Nashville was locked into a playoff spot playing their 82nd game. Go back to when the Penguins used to lock up playoff spots and go back and look at the last games of their season. There's one priority, and that's to get through the thing without injury.
Right.
And I can go back and show you. I remember specifically games in Philadelphia, at least one. I think they had a home-and-home with Philly 1 year. And the last game was both teams playing like an NFL exhibition game. So do you think there may have been some mitigating factors, Sully, that allowed your team to play its, quote, best game of the season, like that the other team wasn't even half interested in the game? I mean, this is just, what has become of him?
I've used the phrase many times, and I'll use it again, lying to yourself, because that's what they're doing. They just don't live in reality right now. And maybe, you know, the way they do things will change some of our discourse. Maybe they, again, like you said, he's just saying the right things. But to me, I would much rather him come out and said, what happened this year is just not acceptable.
Yeah.
It's not acceptable. We're not we're not making progress as an organization. We're not making progress as a team. We're going to have to make some real changes. We're going to have to go into this offseason and have some really difficult conversations and take a real long, hard look at everything we're doing because this is not acceptable. And if he said that, and I'll be honest with you, and we draw a lot of parallels between them and the Steelers and Tomlin and Sullivan. One thing I will give Mike Tomlin a little bit, or Mike Tomlin, I'll give him credit for is he kind of said that. We have to take a long, hard look, and I'm open to any suggestions, right? I'm open to anything because what we're doing hasn't really worked. He at least said that, and you know what? They went out and did it in some to some degree. They went out and made some changes and did some things differently, and you know what? That's what we need to see from the Penguins.
Well, last year they went out and got Carlson, which was a gigantic move, you know what I mean? But I'm with you on the whole Sully.
To me, listen, here's where it comes to me, for me, Joe. It has to be the head coach. I mean, it's good to change his coaching staff, but I'm saying you've got to clean out the entire staff, coaching staff. And it wouldn't hurt to try and clean out some of the players that have been here for a while and try and, you know, really let's go forward with a new philosophy.
The notion that this stretch, this point streak that included a bunch of points against teams that were locked in and therefore less than fully interested is somehow going to manifest itself in October is just point blank ludicrous. Coming up, Jonathan Bomboli. We'll ask him. He's a great, great hockey observer. We'll ask him for his opinions on this Penguins disaster. Or if you want to turn your view of it around to this wonderful Penguins ending and how much character they showed at the end of the year and how it's all going to lead into next October, maybe we can talk about that. Unbelievable City Limits. Let's just play this for a moment. Suddenly I'm depressed. And for some reason, ironically, sad music makes me less depressed.
Is this a sad song?
This is the guy from who sang The Land Down Under? The Australian group.
Is it Men at Work?
Yes, this is the guy from them.
Oh, okay.
If only I could remember his name.
Nice.
Are you depressed?
Well, that's a different story.
Limits, let's go to Jonathan Bomboli. It's Penguins locker cleanout day. And there's some interesting news and quotes coming out of there. But I think we should treat Jonathan, first of all, to my interaction with, what was that guy's name?
Nick Faribault.
Nick Faribault. Jonathan, how are you?
Good. Colin Hay. That's the lead singer.
Colin? Yes. That was Colin Hay. Very good. You're one for one. I never met this man before from Steelers Now. His name was Nick. Our friend City Limits here, the producer you just talked to, arranged for the interview and sent me a faulty bio on Nick. So this was the intro. Nick, it's a pleasure to have you. I don't believe we've ever spoken before. You're a recent graduate of Slippery Rock. Am I right about that?
No.
And it was downhill from there, Jonathan. Thoughts?
Well, was he implying that being a recent graduate of Slippery Rock was an insult?
No, not at all. It's just it was not factual. He was a graduate of Pitt.
He said he was a graduate. He said he was a graduate of Pitt. And what was it? Joe was like, "Well, wait a minute. I think I read your bio, and your bio said you're from Slippery Rock." and just went it went further in the hole as we tried to get out of the hole.
I was pushing
the
issue.
I'm not sure how you can recover from that, Joe. That's a tough one. When you don't, you're talking to someone and you think it's someone else, that's not, yeah.
Well, you immediately shift the blame, which I did to City Limits. Unfortunate. Yeah. We haven't talked in a while either.
Yeah.
Let's start. Man, there's a lot of things to talk about. I just saw Seth Rohrbaugh tweet that Chris Letang says he was dealing with several injury-related things toward year's end that were relevant to multiple maintenance days he took. For me, I could see it. He didn't have an explosion in his game. I thought it was obvious. You, and what do you think of his season overall?
Yeah, he was actually, you know, I mean, one of the things you worry about with this team is it wearing down because the key players are older. And it, you know, Chris Letang's not going to wear down because he's, you know, not in condition. I mean, that guy is the, one of the most dedicated athletes I've ever seen in my entire life in terms of his conditioning. But when you're 30-something, sometimes you get hurt. And I think, I mean, that's something you play through it. But, I mean, I don't know. To me, there was definitely a drop-off with Letang because I thought he was having a really great season, like, about halfway through. And then, yeah, you definitely saw that wear down. At the end, like, this stretch where they played well in the last month, I thought was actually more like what I expected to see out of them all year, which is that they scored more and gave up more. These were more high-scoring games down the stretch. I thought we were going to see that all year, and we really didn't. But I think, you know, Letang being hurt, that would be part of that, right? I mean, he would, you know, you'd see that on the defensive end more so than the offensive end.
City Limits, why the clicking again? We had this with Shelty the other day, and I'm certainly not blaming you for this.
No, we're
God
blaming
knows.
You.
Yeah, actually, is this your fault?
No,
this always
it just occurs.
Happen? What do you mean it occurs? How? Paul?
I have no idea. You're asking me about technology, and I don't even know. Jonathan, to your point, to try and bring this back on track, you know, if you're going to move forward with the trio, or actually four, I don't know, what do we call them, four Hall of Fame type guys that are old, is it smart that they all four played 82 games? I mean, I know that, you know, load management isn't necessarily a thing that is always going to be embraced in the hockey culture, but shouldn't maybe they rethink that?
Well, I mean, given their circumstances, I think that, you know, obviously had a lot to do with it. I mean, every point was so critical down the stretch, you weren't going to get Chris Letang to sit out unless you, you know, like physically restrained him in the locker room. And Sid's like that 82 games. Like the idea of, you know, you mentioned it, it's not part of hockey culture. And Sid is certainly a you know, hockey culture runs in his blood. And the idea that you could sit down for a couple games midseason and say, hey, we just want you to rest, you know, to be fresh down the stretch. Like, he'd look at you like you have three heads. And he would never, ever go for that. So I can't speak for, you know, maybe Malkin would, maybe Carlson would, maybe Letang would. But Sid would not go for that at all. The thing about it is, though, is that, you know, Letang was dealing with an obvious injury, but we're obvious now that we've heard that, but you know, Crosby was great at the end of the year. Malkin played some of his best hockey at the end of the year. I actually thought Carlson was probably, well, I mean, he had his really bad moments, but he also had some really good moments. And I guess that's sort of the curse of Erik Karlsson, but Sid and Gino, they're playing great in April. So, you know, look, they don't have the speed. They don't have the explosiveness that they had as a group, you know, years ago. That's just a fact, and that's going to make it more difficult to sort of, you know, get back to where they want to go. I mean, that's a fact of life. I don't think you can change that by sitting somebody down for a couple games in November or December, even though, I mean, it's not a bad idea, but I just, it's definitely out of the box hockey-wise.
Well, just to sort of add to that, when you mentioned Carlsson, which I was going to ask you, but since you just mentioned him, we can move that question up in this interview and just ask you. You look back at the totality of his 82 games. How would you grade sort of the trade? And, you know, if it didn't work the way that they thought it was going to work, where did you see maybe some of the issues?
Well, I think how he played and the trade, grading the trade, are actually kind of two separate things, because the trade was great. I mean, they got rid of some of their highest paid players in the process. So, you know, the trade it gets good marks. Now, how did Carlson play throughout the course of the season? Like a C. And he does what he does, and it's critical and it's important in modern hockey in that he pushes the pace. Like, he gets the puck out of his own end. He gets you playing in the other team's end. He's good at that, and he's consistently good at that. And the downside to that is sometimes you're fishing pucks out of your own net, right? Because, you know, I mean, that's just the nature of being more, you know, of taking more risks. So, and he, I mean, we saw those risks backfire in bad spots, in ugly ways, in big games. And so for that reason, you can't, you know, as much as I like Carlson's analytics and as much as I like the way he, you know, changes the way the game is played, I do. I like him a lot. But you can't ignore the warts, especially in a season like this. If you put up 110 points, you can ignore the warts a little more. But in the Penguin structure, he's not going to do that. And he put up about half that. And so that didn't entirely outweigh the bad. But, I mean, on balance, looking at the big picture, that's Erik Karlsson. You know, there's going to be more scoring chances for and more scoring chances against when he's on the ice. So he is as advertised in that sense, and he does some really important things, and he also does some things that make you pull your hair out.
Jonathan, like I said, there's so many issues to get to here. I'm tempted now to go straight to free association. Paul, would you mind if I indulge Jonathan?
No, this is always one of the most entertaining parts of the interviews.
So very short answers here, Jonathan, and this will also maybe lead us, depending on how you answer some of these, to a follow-up question by Paul. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
You can even say yes or no if you're so inclined. Would you fire Mike Sullivan?
No, I would not.
Would you trade Tristan Jarry?
Probably.
Do you think Tristan Jarry is somebody's franchise goaltender?
I think there are franchises that have worse goaltenders starting than Tristan Jarry.
Would you
I don't know if that's the same thing, is it?
I don't know. Would you try to trade Erik Karlsson?
No, juice probably isn't worth the squeeze. If somebody gave me a great offer, but no, probably not.
Would you approach Gino about waiving his no movement clause?
Oh no, that ship has sailed. When they re-signed Malkin and Letang, they're in it. They're in it for the long haul with those guys.
Would you try to re-sign Nedeljkovic?
Maybe. If I can move Jarry.
Is Joel Blomqvist ready, yes or no?
That's the thing, right? Yes, I think so. I think he's having a great rookie year in the AHL. Like, Matt Murray, good. And I would definitely be willing to hitch my wagon to him.
Please keep your answers slightly shorter, although they've been great so far. Drew O'Connor will be a top six winger for a long time.
I'm starting to like him more and more.
Can they get rid of Ryan Graves?
Boy, that'll be tough. I'm going to say no.
Will they bring Guentzel back?
I don't think so.
Would you try?
Probably not, no.
How much responsibility does Todd Reirden bear for the historically horrendous power play?
Less than most people think, because it's Sully's show.
The person most responsible for the historically heinous power play was who?
I guess it's Mike Sullivan.
The single biggest reason, okay, I'm going to press you on that, the single player that had the most to do with the power play being horrible.
That's a tough one. I mean, who has the puck on a stick most? Erik Karlsson.
Single biggest reason 3-on-3 was a mitigated disaster.
Arrogance?
I like that answer. All right, Jonathan. Paul, I thought there were some very interesting answers there. He would probably trade Jari. He wouldn't fire Sully. Sully is to blame for the horrible power play, as is Carlson. And the one that jumped out to me, I don't know if you want to follow this up, Paul. He says Blomqvist is ready. He had a Matt Murray-like year in the AHL, which is a pretty damn good year.
That would suggest then that, you know, it's time to move on from one or both of your goalies. Is he ready to be the everyday starter is the question. Is he ready to be the goalie?
I think that is the question. I'm not entirely sure about that. So I'd want to make sure you paired him with a good veteran guy. But to me, and this is probably because of my background coming to the AHL as long as I did, I think the biggest thing that this team could do to get better in the near term is get younger. And that includes in goal because – I mean, you know, that was part of the equation in 16 and 17 was get younger and goal. So I want my bottom six filled with young kids. I want my third D pair filled with young kids, and I want one of my goaltenders to be a young kid. So, you know, it's different talking about goaltenders than skaters, obviously. But I think, you know, from having talked to people in Wilkes-Barre, Blomqvist is the real deal. He's, you know, is he the real deal, you know, on a level that's going to win you a cup someday? I don't know. Obviously, Matt Murray did that twice. But is he an NHL player? He's definitely an NHL goaltender.
Jonathan, you're a wonderful man. You're a philanthropist, a patriot, a spiritual guru, an inspiration to Ron Cook, and a mentor to City Limits, who can't seem to control the annoying clicks on interviews and who gave me a faulty bio for the Steeler guy. Thank you.
Hey, sometime this summer, if you want to just play bands and I'll try to guess their lead singers, we could do that sometime, Joe.
All right, we will do that. Thank you.
That would be fun. I would like that.
All right.
Goodbye, Jonathan.
See ya.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.